Good evening. It's good to see each of you tonight. Hopefully you all are having a good week and staying cool. It's been pretty hot out. I'm excited about our study tonight. On Sunday, we were looking at the end of chapter 27, and we studied chapter 28 of Genesis, and some very important things happened in those verses that we studied on Sunday. We discussed how there was a great deception that occurred on the part of Rebekah and on the part of Jacob in deceiving Isaac for a blessing, how Jacob received the blessing from Isaac. An interesting passage that I stumbled over, we've been going to Hebrews chapter 11 a great deal, but in Hebrews chapter 11 there is an interesting verse that ties into what we were studying on Sunday. Hebrews 11 verse 20, by faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau, even regarding things to come. And we know that when this deception occurred, that there was this spoken blessing that was given from Isaac to his son Jacob. When he was thinking that it was Esau, he was deceived. But also after that, when Esau is weeping and he is so saddened by what has occurred, Isaac is trembling violently. At this point, Esau is asking for a blessing. And he's practically telling his son, I don't have any other blessings, right? Well, right after that, he does speak to him, remember, and he tells him about specific things to come. As Hebrews chapter 11, verse 20 says, behold, away from the fertility of the earth will be your dwelling, away from the dew of heaven above, by your sword you shall live, your brother you shall serve. It shall come about when you become restless that you will break his yoke from your neck. And so he is telling of things to come, both on the part of what will happen for Jacob, and both what will happen for Esau. And so that's an interesting verse that ties into Hebrews chapter 11. So Esau has great sadness, he has great anger, obviously, because of the deceit of Jacob. And what does Esau plan to do? He's going to kill him. And he's going to wait until Isaac passes away is his plan, but then he has full intention to kill his brother. Rebekah hears of this, and so at the end of chapter 27, going into chapter 28, Rebekah speaks to Jacob first and gives instructions. What kind of instructions does she give? What was it? I'm sorry. Yeah, you need to go to Laban. I'm going to send you off to Padanaram to Laban, so you'll have safety. And the other thing that she wants him to do, and also Isaac wants Jacob to do, is what? Find a wife. She does not want him marrying anyone of the land that they're in Canaan, but they want him to take a wife from Padanaram, from the daughters of Laban. Specifically, it says, even from the daughters of Laban, so from Rebekah's family. So Isaac passes the blessings of Abraham onto Jacob. Jacob leaves and goes toward Padanaram, and on the way, the Lord appears to him. And we spoke about this dream as far as this ladder that he sees, where the base of the ladder is on earth, the top of it is in heaven. There are angels ascending and descending on the ladder. The Lord is at the top of the ladder, and the Lord speaks to him. And what is the Lord really doing? He's relaying the promises on. That's exactly right. He's passing the promises that were given to his grandfather, Abraham, which were then given to Isaac. He's passing them on to Jacob. And those promises are so important. Specifically in verse 13, he says, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham, the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and to your descendants. Your descendants shall be like the dust of the earth. You will spread to the north, south, east, and west, and in you and your descendants, all the families of the earth shall be blessed, which are the continued promises that we keep talking about of Genesis chapter 12, which are so important and abundant. The Lord also tells Jacob that he's going to be with him, that he's going to keep him wherever he goes, and he's going to bring him back to this land. Did the Lord also tell Abraham that he was going to be with him and keep him wherever he went? Yes, that's another pass-on blessing. In tonight's class, with what we're going to be reading in the text, we'll be dealing a great deal with the descendants. This is where many children come about on the part of Jacob. And so we really do see the family tree just expand very quickly. And so we do see that beginning to occur. But he tells him in verse 15, I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. So he's making this commitment to Jacob. Jacob's response is what? What was that? the Lord's in this place. He talks about the Lord's house is here and how awesome is this place. And he says, if the Lord does what he said he's going to do, he's going to be my God. I'm going to follow him. I'm going to trust in his promises if he carries out what he said. And that's the way Jacob feels, and that's what he's going to do. And so as you pick up in chapter 29, he's continuing his journey. He's continuing his journey toward Padan Aram to go toward Laban, and that's where he is headed. So let's look at Genesis chapter 29, and we'll read these first 8 verses here. Then Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the sons of the east. He looked and saw a well in the field, and behold, 3 flocks of sheep were lying there beside it. For from that well they watered the flocks. Now the stone on the mouth of the well was large. When all the flocks were gathered there, they would then roll the stone from the mouth of the well and water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place on the mouth of the well. Jacob said to them, "My brothers, where are you from?" They said, "We are from Haran." He said to them, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" And they said, "We know him." And he said to them, "Is it well with him?" And they said, "It is well. And here is Rachel, his daughter, coming with the sheep." He said, "Behold, it is still high day. It is not time for the livestock to be gathered. Water the sheep and go and pasture them." But they said, "We cannot until all the flocks are gathered, and they roll the stone away from the mouth of the well. Then we will water the sheep." So right here, Jacob is continuing his journey. He arrives at the land of the sons of the east. Does anyone's translation read in verse 1 anything about Jacob lifted up his feet and traveled? Does anyone have a translation that reads that? Some translations, the literal translation, says something of that he lifted up his feet and traveled. Some speculate here and say that that's possible, that it means that at this point he had this mindset after seeing this dream, after being given these promises passed on that were Abraham's promises being passed on to him, that he is very much encouraged. I think that we could say that's probably very true, that he's encouraged by it when he arrives at this place. And I think we're going to see that more so in his reaction when he meets Rachel, as far as how he feels about things and how things are going for him. But as he arrives there, there was a well with a large stone on the mouth of the well. There were 3 flocks of sheep lying beside the well. And Jacob met some men from Haran at this well, and they have this brief conversation. And in this conversation, Jacob asks if the men know Laban. They say they do. And then he asks if it's going well with him, and they say yes. And then they actually relay that who's coming. Right here, here comes Rachel. This is Laban's daughter coming. And so we're actually introduced to Rachel, who is Laban's daughter, right here in this section. One other thing to point out here, as far as when you're reading through this and it talks about we cannot water until all the flocks are gathered and we roll the stone away from the mouth of the well, then we water the sheep. It sounds like that with this well, this probably was a very large rock and a very large stone, and so they would try to water all the sheep at one time. And even Jacob is questioning a little bit as far as the process in which they do this. But they assure him this is the process in which that they carry this out, to water all the sheep at one time. And they all gather there together. Okay? Let's look at verses 9 through 12. And while he was speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. When Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, Jacob went up and rolled the stone from the mouth of the well and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. Jacob told Rachel that he was a relative of her father and that she was Rebekah's son. And she ran and told her father. So Jacob meets Rachel for the first time, who is a daughter of Laban. Do you think that he is encouraged by meeting a daughter of Laban already? Very much so. His instruction from his father was that he needed to marry a daughter of Laban. Here's a daughter of Laban, and it's Rachel. And so he meets her there at the well. What was Rachel doing at the well? She was a shepherdess. So she was caring for whose sheep? Her father's, Laban's sheep. So she was caring for the sheep of Laban. And there's some interesting parallels here when you think about reading this passage, reading this these statements that are happening here, compared to when the servant went on the part of Abraham to find a wife for Isaac. There are some interesting parallels here. Rebekah, his mother, had used a well to provide water for who? Abraham's servants and the camels. In this case, who is the one that actually is the servant and goes and takes care of all the sheep? It's Jacob. It says that Jacob removes the stone from the well, and Jacob is the one that goes out of his way to water the sheep of Laban. And so it's interesting, I think, when you can think about those two comparisons of Rebekah, and then she's being a servant, and then the son later, years later, Rebekah's son is being a servant here at the well. It's trying to serve Rachel and serve Laban's sheep. It states that Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. Scripture does not reveal specifically what was going through Jacob's mind when he wept. He's obviously overcome with emotion when he meets Rachel here. But what could be some reasons why he might be weeping? He found Laban's daughter. He's rejoicing. We saw when the servant of Abraham, when he found Rebekah, how much he was overjoyed, how he praised God for it. And so you can see on his part, he's probably very, very much happy about finding Rachel, overjoyed. And also, he could be thankful for thankful for what God has done for him, showing him great favor. So here he is with Rachel, Laban's daughter. God had said he would be with him and keep him wherever he went. He's already seeing benefits of the promises of God that he had in the dream previously. Jacob tells Rachel that he was a relative of her father and was Rebekah's son, and so she runs to tell her father, Laban. All right, let's look at verses 13 through 20. So when Laban heard the news of Jacob, his sister's son, he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. Then he related to Laban all these things. Laban said to him, "Surely you are my bone and my flesh." And he stayed with him a month. Then Laban said to Jacob, "Because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me what your wages will be." Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah. The name of the younger was Rachel. And Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful of form and face. Now Jacob loved Rachel. So he said, "I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel." Laban said, "It is better that I give her to you than to give her to another man. Stay with me." So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of his love for her. There's many things we can discuss here. First of all, Laban runs to meet Jacob. I think it's interesting when you compare the two stories again of Abraham's servant. You have this running. When they meet a relative, there's this running to go tell the other relatives, "Guess who's here?" And there's this great joy. And you see this again. Laban ran out to meet Jacob. Laban also ran out to meet Isaac in Genesis chapter 24 to go see him and to meet him. And so Laban says, "Surely you are bone, or my bone and my flesh." And Jacob was recognized by Laban as being one of his closest relatives. Laban obviously loved his sister, Rebekah, very much. And so there is a passage here where it says in verse 13, the end of verse 13, "Then he," being Jacob, "related to Laban all these things." Jacob related all the things that were going on, telling about his family, telling about how Rebekah was doing, filling him in. And you can understand the great joy that Laban would have felt because of the separation of them of many, many, many miles and hearing this good news and meeting Jacob in the flesh, what that would have meant to him. In verse 15, Laban says to Jacob, "Because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me what your wages should be." At this point, it's interesting to consider he had already been with him 1 month. So he had been serving and he's been there 1 month with Laban. But Laban is saying, "What should your wages be? You shouldn't just serve me for nothing. Name what you want for your wages." And what does he specifically ask for? Rachel. All right. So let's look at a couple of things here. We're going to backtrack a little. Laban has two daughters. One of the daughters is named Leah. And when we read of Leah here, what we're informed of is in verse 16, she is the older sister.
Also, it states that her eyes were weak. Depending on the translation, English Standard Version says weak. New American Standard Version says weak. New King James says that her eyes were delicate. The King James Version says that her eyes were tender. And so that's a really interesting statement. But when you compare it to what is said about Rachel, Rachel, it is said in verse 16, obviously, that she is the younger sister of Leah, but also that she was beautiful of form and of face. It's really making the point that what? Rachel was more beautiful than Leah. As far as what specifically that means about her eyes being weak and such, I don't know exactly if I can make any type of supposition or guessing there, but the fact of the matter is we know Rachel was more attractive than Leah, physically attractive. So regardless of the translation, that is apparent. Who did Jacob love? He loved Rachel, right? He loved Rachel. He did. And that's very apparent with what's about to happen. And we read this at the very, very end of verse 20. But let's talk about the agreement first. What was the agreement between Laban and Jacob? Jacob says, I'll do what? I'll serve you for 7 years for Rachel's hand in marriage. That's what I want. Does Laban agree to it? That's really important. He does. Laban specifically says in verse 19, Laban says, it is better that I give her to you than to give her to another man. Stay with me. So Laban agrees. That's really important that Laban and Jacob have this agreement, this verbal agreement. Now, how much did Jacob love Rachel? Oh, unbelievable, right? A great, great deal. And you think about, if you look at verse 20, these 7 years that he serves Laban, it says that they seemed to him but a few days because of his love for her. And you think about, he's working for Laban, probably very hard labor. 7 years? That's a long time, we think, right? And those were just a few days to him, right? That shows great love on the part of Jacob for Rachel, how much he just absolutely would do anything to have her as his wife. And so it really shows a long-term commitment, a loving commitment to Rachel. Sadly, things get really complicated in the next few verses, don't they? Thanks to some deceit. So let's go on and let's read verses 21 through 30. Does anyone have any comments so far? Okay. Verse 21. Then Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife, for my time is completed, that I may go into her. Laban gathered all the men of the place and made a feast. Now in the evening he took his daughter Leah and brought her to him, and Jacob went into her. Laban also gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid. So it came about in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, what is this you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served with you? Why then have you deceived me? But Laban said, it is not the practice in our place to marry off the younger before the firstborn. Complete the week of this one, and we will give you the other also for the service, which you shall serve with me for another 7 years. Jacob did so, and completed her week, and he gave him his daughter Rachel as his wife. Laban also gave his maid Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as her maid. So Jacob went into Rachel also, and indeed he loved Rachel more than Leah. And he served with Laban another 7 years. Now, in verse 21, Jacob told Laban that his time was completed. He has completed his 7 years, and now he's saying, practically, give me my wages. I want Rachel's hand in marriage. It's time. And Laban, what he does is he begins a very, very deceitful scheme, doesn't he? And what he does here, he gathers all the men. He prepares a feast. So they're getting everything ready for a wedding. What he does is instead of taking Rachel, who he's supposed to give Jacob in marriage, he takes who? Leah. Now, there's several thoughts that probably come across as you read this text. One of the thoughts would be, would Leah have been in agreement with this whole plot? She probably would have had to have gone along with it because her father wanted her to. On the other hand, too, where is Rachel in all this? That's interesting to think about. Where is Rachel?
Was she at the wedding? Was she not at the wedding? Where is she at? What was going on? Because Laban is doing something quite deceitful here in giving Leah, the oldest daughter, to Jacob. And Jacob has no idea of who he is marrying. At this time in marriages, more than likely she was very veiled. And the situation is he doesn't know until the next morning that this is Leah and it's not Rachel. And so some interesting statements are made by Jacob. How does Jacob react to this deception? Right. It's such a complicated situation. He says, "What is this you have done to me?" And then he says, it's three questions. "Was it not for Rachel that I served you?" And then the last one he says, "Why then have you deceived me?" Now what's so interesting about this is Jacob who's speaking. A deceiver. The same person who earlier, right, last on Sunday when we studied this, was speaking about, well, God is the one that helped me to catch the animal so fast and helped me to prepare it so quickly for you. And also, yes, I am Esau. And directly said, I am Esau. The deceiver is being deceived. And later on, Laban's going to be the one that is deceived. So you just have this game of someone deceives someone. The one who was deceived becomes, I mean, it's just this game. This constant game of the being deceived or being a deceiver. It's about paybacks. And it's a really, really sad circle that keeps going around and around. But you can see the difficulty there. How did Laban answer when he brings up all these things about, why did you deceive me? Laban says, you've got to do two things. So he adds on to the list. You've already served me 7 years. Yeah. You got to do two more things. You got to complete Leah's week, which meant that this was a marriage feast that probably lasted for a week. And then the other thing you're going to have to do is you're going to have to work for me how many more years? Seven more years. And we don't get any reply scripturally from Jacob. He doesn't say, well, this is a bad deal. Like it says he just did it. And I think that's interesting. He just said he did. He served another 7 years. And I'm sure he wasn't happy about it by any means, but he served another 7 years. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Of what was transpiring. So Jacob had no recourse in saying,
right,
wait a minute. Because Laban would have had the support of his community.
Right.
Jacob was the outside.
Right. That's a very good point. Right. Yeah, Larry? That's a great point.
Secondly, when you're looking at this, Jacob had 7 years to understand the customs of the place. So it's interesting to me that Leah didn't find a husband during that 7 years. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that Jacob didn't understand what the practices related to marriage were, because I'm sure they didn't live in isolation.
Very good. That's a great point. Dale. Right. And it was a custom of the times, it seems. It was an early custom that when there was a situation like this, that the older would be married first prior to the younger. So that custom, whether that's true in this case or not, I don't know. I wasn't living back then. But there were customs of that sort in history. But he is using that as his. That's right. And like that goes back to Larry. Should he have known that? You know, maybe he should have known that. I don't know. Or is Laban just pulling that out, and just saying, just to make it convincing. That's right. It works out well for Laban. He gets 14 years of, labor, and he gets two daughters married. Oh, yeah. Very much.
Another thing, too, is, he ran to it. But you remember when the servant
Mm-hmm. Right. He was enticed by the goods.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, what the time before, I had all this stuff, so he'd go there and doesn't have anything.
Right. It's not this big caravan of goods coming behind. Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's a great point. Yes. Kenny. That's right, and on Sunday we discussed that.
This is a good deal.
That's right, because... That's right. That's right, and what happens in that situation, you're exactly right. Laban makes a reference about how blessed he is because of Jacob. When Jacob wants to leave, he talks about, I've been very blessed because of you being here by the Lord. I think he's well aware of what Jacob brings. You're right.
I think that plays a lot of just being a man of faith. Mm-hmm. And
that's right. So Laban requires Jacob to serve 7 years to marry Rachel, 7 more years. And in this case, he is given Rachel in marriage. So now he has 2 wives, Leah and Rachel. Could use my quote that Dale likes a lot right here, but I won't go there from last time I taught. Right here, let's look at these last few verses here. Verses 31 through 35. Now the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, and he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. Leah conceived and bore a son and named him Reuben, for she said, because the Lord has seen my affliction, surely now my husband will love me. Then she conceived again and bore a son, and said, because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me this son also. So she named him Simeon. She conceived again and bore a son and said, now this time my husband will become attached to me because I have borne him 3 sons. Therefore, his name was Levi. And she conceived again and bore a son and said, this time I will praise the Lord. Therefore, she named him Judah. Then she stopped bearing. Who saw that Leah was unloved? The Lord did. The Lord acknowledged it and the Lord saw it. The Lord is well aware of how Jacob loved Rachel and Jacob did not love Leah the same way. So what did the Lord do for Leah? Made her where she could conceive and have children. That's right. And so she has 4 children. Right off the bat here, we'll have more children later on as we go into the next chapter. What are some similarities that are kind of striking here between Sarah, Rebecca, and Rachel? All of them were barren. Who interceded in all 3 cases in some way, shape, or form? The Lord. All 3 were barren. In some way, shape, or form, the Lord interceded so all 3 of those women could have offspring and have children. In the case of Sarah, the Lord promised Abraham and Sarah that they would have a son. In the case of Isaac and Rebekah, Isaac actually prayed on Rebekah's behalf. The Lord answered him, and she was able to conceive. Later on, in chapter 30, we're going to learn that Rachel was remembered by God. And then God remembers her, and that's why she was able to conceive and have children. So in all 3 cases with these 3 women, very important women that we've been discussing, all of them were barren, unable to have children, and God interceded in some way or intervened in some way so that they could have children. So that's very interesting. Another thing I think is interesting is to look at the names that are given here. And with every single child that we have outside of Dinah, but all the sons, the 12 sons, there is always a statement made by the mother.
And if it's not the mother, it is Leah, if it's on the part of her maid had a child, and she speaks on part of it. And those statements have a lot to do with what their actual names are, which is very interesting. So here we have several statements of Leah. The first one, the firstborn son, is Reuben. So this is the firstborn son of Jacob and Leah. And the statement that she makes is, "Because the Lord has seen my affliction, surely now my husband will love me." It's sad. It is sad. You think about, she's hoping that Jacob will love her more and that he will show affection to her and love her. But she does reference the Lord, that the Lord has seen my affliction and the Lord has blessed me. That's how I got a son, was because of God. The second son, Simeon, "Because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me this son also." She again, Leah acknowledges the Lord. The Lord gave him to me and saw that I was unloved. The third son, Levi, "Now this time my husband will become attached to me because I have borne him three sons." She's still hoping. She's on her third son with Jacob. She's still hoping Jacob will love me eventually. I have three sons. And then when she gets to Judah, the statement changes a little bit. It says, "This time I will praise the Lord." Isn't that interesting? So all throughout, she's giving credit to God. God is the one that had provided her with children. She knows that. She knows that God had acknowledged how she was unloved and had blessed her. But it's interesting that it goes from, she also wants to get attention, more attention and more love from her husband. But it's not happening. It's obvious from her statements, it's not happening. Jacob is in love with Rachel, and he's not loving Leah in the same manner. So at this point, at the end of chapter 29, Leah has four children. Rachel has none. And that's what we see right here at the end of this chapter. Do we have any comments before we'll look at the beginning of chapter 30? What is it? Yeah, that's right. Huh? It's like a children's scoreboard. Or, yeah, a son's or children's scoreboard. Yeah, we've got more to add, too. Yeah. Okay, let's look here at the beginning of chapter 30. Because this ties right into what we were just reading. So Leah has four sons. Now, when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, she became jealous of her sister, and she said to Jacob, "Give me children or else I die." Then Jacob's anger burned against Rachel, and he said, "Am I in the place of God, who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb?" She said, "Here is my maid Bilhah. Go into her, that she may bear on my knees, that through her I too may have children." So she gave him to her, she gave him her maid Bilhah as a wife, and Jacob went into her, and Bilhah conceived, and bore Jacob a son. Then Rachel said, "God has vindicated me, and has indeed heard my voice, and given me a son." Therefore she named him Dan. Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again, and bore Jacob a second son. And Rachel said, "With mighty wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister, and I have indeed prevailed." And she named him Naphtali. It's a very interesting statement that is made here at the beginning of chapter 30. What did Rachel say to Jacob? "Give me children, or I'm going to die." And it means such a blunt and bold statement. "Give me children or else I'm going to die." And what's Jacob's reaction to that? "Yeah, it's not in my power." Like, yeah, that's in the hands of God. And you can see that this woman that obviously he loved very much and has worked years and years for, he loves Rachel. But it says in verse 2 that his anger burned against her. And there's this jealousy that is occurring between these two wives, between Leah and Rachel. But he says, "Am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb?" He's saying, "I have no control over this. Why are you mad at me?" I mean, that's practically what he's saying to her. "I have no control over this. This is in the hands of God." What was Rachel's solution to not being able to conceive? Right, the maid. This is the maid that was given when they were married, that was given by Laban. It was Laban's maid that was passed on. So this is Bilhah, who is given to Jacob to be a wife. So now he has three wives. He has Leah, Rachel, and Bilhah. And the statements that are made here are not made by Bilhah. They're made by Rachel. Because she believes, obviously, since the maid is going to have the children with Jacob, these will practically be my children, right? And so she says about Dan, "God has vindicated me,
and has indeed heard my voice and has given me a son. Speaking, I think, a great deal about the jealousy that's occurring between Leah and Rachel. God has vindicated me. She also says about Naphtali, with mighty wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister, and I have indeed prevailed. You have this very complicated sister duel that's happening between Leah and Rachel involving having children. So, at this point, we have Leah has four children. Rachel still has none, technically, but she gave Jacob her maid Bilhah, and she has two. Now let's look at verse 9. In verse 9 it reads, "When Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, she took her maid Zilpah and gave her to Jacob as a wife. Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a son. Then Leah said, 'How fortunate!' So she named him Gad. Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a second son. Then Leah said, 'Happy am I, for women will call me happy.' And so she named him Asher." So, same type of situation. What is Leah's solution? Because she's had sons with Jacob, but it says that now she stopped bearing. Her solution is to do what? Go to the maid again. Another maid that was given to her in marriage when she was married. It was a maid of Laban's. And so the maid, in this case, is passed on. And the maid in this case is Zilpah, that is given on to be another wife of Jacob. So now he has four wives. About Gad, she says, "How fortunate." And about Asher, she says, "Happy am I, for women will call me happy." And then we have right now, Leah has four children, her maid has two, Rachel still has no children, and Bilhah has two. So at this point, we still do not have any children on the part of Rachel. Will we see some by the end of the chapter? Yes. An interesting thing before we break... these next few verses that we'll look at on Sunday, I'll be going through this and also through chapter 31 on Sunday. An interesting section about mandrakes in these next few verses. And so we'll be talking about that a little bit and the part of mandrakes and how that worked a little bit. So I appreciate your all's comments. Thank you all very much.